So we have to, the studio being used for just several times, maybe sometimes just once or twice a week, it behooves them to make use of the recording studios for other uses, other usages. And what they did was to record the playlists that were being broadcast on the networks. So they have a transcription network, you see. And so we, by that time, the two famous I Love a Mystery plus One Man's Family was being recorded by us. And I was the sound effects man, the man who I follow the script and open and close the door. And by that time, I had to quickly go and brush up on theatrics, theatricals. So I had a grand time doing that. And so the sound effects man is a man who, as I described, one who closed open doors and windows and whatnot and so forth. And there's ample time between these effects where I stay there. And the because the actors vary their time, and the amount of time that you do on the disc is only 15 minutes long. And if they do ham it up, so to speak, you know, length of the speeches, it can run over time. So what one does is that I have to coordinate with the producer inside for the timing. I give them signals to stretch them or link them. Or if they run too long, I have to make cuts, and I have to take the paper, the script away, and make cut certain sections, cut the line down to make it shorter. And then I'm promoted to being an associate producer. Mm-hmm. So from then on, it become very, it was very good for me. So when in 1936, because of the talking movies, all the New York actors congregate down to Hollywood, and San Francisco is no longer the center of all these dramas, and we moved down here to Los Angeles.
What year was that?
1936. Mm-hmm. In 1936, McGregor Studio by that time was very thriving and organized business. My brother also had graduated from high school and came down here too with me. And because I have seen enough of what needs to be done, I became the producer of those soap operas. We had quite a few. Mutiny on the High Seas. All I have to do is buy the script, and then hire the actors, mm-hmm. and direct them into doing these things. Then I would have my own sound effects man and music, and I have enough music so I can have the music in between the interludes, you know. And in between time, about that time, I also, as I said, I'm very curious. I'm also always want to learn something new. And I went to the LA Conservatory, which was situated at 9th Street on the Los Angeles. And I continued with the musical studies. And I was producing 5 strip shows, which is 5 15-minute shows. House of McGregor and so forth. So the result of which it carried on all the way up to 1942. And by that time, I was doing a half-hour show for called Hollywood Theater of Stars, which was being broadcast on CBS. And we would always use a motion picture star as the star. And it was sold to Skippy Peanut Butter. Skippy Peanut Butter was this Alameda firm near Oakland, you know. So we did very well there. And about that time, the war starts, you know. And what happened was the war period in I was doing war period. I knew a Colonel Fogel, and his father was very active in the motion picture business, and he himself was sort of a playboy and always do very drives around in a fancy foreign car and all that. And he was very enterprising. He found out that roller skating was in vogue then. And so what he did was he bought for himself a chain of skating rings. And they had organ music to skate to. And he found that to be very expensive because the union was beginning to become very difficult, you know, demanding tremendous amount of money for the musician to play the organ. So what he did, he wanted to record the organ music on records and just play the records in his various skating rinks. And the recording of the musicians too were expensive. If they at that time when you make a mistake, you have to start all over again. So it may take many, many hours. It may go up to as many as half a dozen records. You don't get a full recording because they break down. So I found one day, I thought of a way. I said, gee, these are good. If we have two good pieces, I can join them together, you know. So I told him that I would like to experiment with something. That is, if he makes a mistake, for him to continue playing on another disc. And what I did exactly is what I said. I joined the two together, which was called editing. Mm-hmm. And nobody really knew how we did it, you know. And I was one who did it, but we belonged to a Sapphire Club. I mean, Sapphire is the needle where you record it. And there's another promising young chap, and he was very skillful on doing something with a turntable, which I didn't know because I was not an engineer. So between the two of us, we came up with an idea of maneuvering the turntable so that I can synchronize from one to the other. So he was one of the fellow that was left over from the Brunswick people who went to China and record our Chinese music. You see, that's why I knew him. And he was so impressed with my uncle's name, who treated him very well. He even changed his name. He was an orphan, I think, to Chang, you know, Chang Winters, you know, he called himself Chang. And so there were only two of us that knew how to do that. And through through this method of dovetailing music or editing the music, we got into the war business. How that came about is Colonel Fogel was active as a reserve, and when World War II started, they needed a civilian army very quickly, and they had just plain old Joe from maybe a dentist or maybe a grocery clerk, and they become soldiers, and they sent up to Alaska, sent over to North Africa. And like they say, there's a right way to do things, and there's an army way to do things. And the army of always goofing was like they would send fur parkas to the soldiers in North Africa and would send mosquito netting to the Alaskan outfit. And as a result of which is that a lot of these units in Alaska were committing suicide. And also there were all kinds of GIs in North Africa getting venereal disease from going into the Kasbah, you know. However, in one small little island or unit, they didn't have any problem at all. And then the psychiatrist and doctor went in to find out what happened, is that they had a radio station going. And they all take part in that, I mean the unit. And consequently, they were very healthy in the thinking. They didn't sit around and brood. And so they found out that they must do something about it, and they contacted the Young and Rubicam at the time was the biggest agency, who had Jack Benny, Fred Allen, and all those big shows, you know, and they formed this radio unit. And because the Army was the predominant, had the most numbers, so the Army ran it, and Colonel Fogel was one of the one. And so the programs that they had were air chats, in other words, the recording of the program right off the air.
Mm-hmm.
Now that includes a lot of commercial, all that sort of thing. And the Army said, oh, we cannot do that. He said, then there'd be a, will be really their captured audience, captive audience, I should say. And they're subjected to this advertisement, and it's wrong. And that's where we came in. And both Chang and I, we would cut out the music. And because I have musical knowledge, I substitute other music in there. And in the first few years, first year of it, I mean, I was being named as an expert consultant to the War and Navy departments. And then we send out programs to these various places. And immediately, within, I think, like 6 months, Fiji in North Africa went down something from 70% down to maybe 10% or something like that. And in the suicide in Alaska too, which just went way, way down. It was spectacular. And we grew very fast. Immediately we had all kinds of people. And then it caught the attention of all the generals. They all came by and watched what we did. When they saw us, both Chang and I, he said, hey, these are little kids. Just throw them into the Army. So Colonel Fogel was very, 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 very good. What he did was he insisted on giving us a commission. So I got a commission. I was commissioned first lieutenant. Chang was also commissioned. I mean, the American boy. And so the two of us ran the technical end, and ultimately I became a technical officer, office of technical production is what it is. And when I ended, I became a major. And by that time, I'm pretty tired of the Navy, of the Army too. And they offered me to stay in, and offered me a lieutenant colonelcy and all that. I said, no, I want to go back into the business. I went back into with McGregor. I continued producing show. And then television came on and became very strong. And I felt that I had to get into that. And I actually, at that time, it was a strange juncture because motion picture was getting very big. And I forgot to tell you that besides studying at the LA Conservatory of Music, I also study art because from the Chinese calligraphy, you know, I mean, and I had dabbled in, you saw the Mo Shi Hua, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, so I went to study art too. And through art, I mean, I knew about designing. And then I thought of getting into the motion picture business first because that was really very big. And somehow I was lucky. They were just doing The King and I by that time, 1957. So I got to design the whole ballet sequence for The King and I. And lo and behold, the moment the picture was over, I was out of a job. And I had to go look for another job. I said, this is all nonsense. I'm going to go back to the network and television, which I did because I went into the music department of CBS. And I stayed there until I retired. And it was very wonderful with those CBS years because I was the only Oriental working for the company at that time.
The years you
the
were
years,
CBS?
Yes, it was CBS from 57 to 74.
the only Oriental in the music operations?
Well, I see in all in the West Coast area where we do all the programs. Not until, well, I would say they begin to have cutters around, not until really the blacks that begin to talk about yellow power, and that's when they bombard the big companies. And I think it was not until the 70s before they had any Chinese. I think the first one, there were only two of us. I think in about 1964, there was another Chinese, and her name was Jane Tsai, and she was in the art department. And we were the only two. And I remember in the 1940s, James Wong Howe was in the motion picture. I, Paul, and myself, my brother, was in radio, and the other radio member was Barbara Jean Wong, who acted. And we say, gee, in show business there are only just the three of us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I mean, there were lots of actors that would do acting, but actually working behind the camera, working for the company all the year round, we were the ones.
Mm-hmm.
So, during, I would say during that time, I know I had to make many changes. When I was at home, I would have to be thoroughly Chinese. When I was at school, I had to be thoroughly American. Otherwise, you wouldn't be. I want to be part of it. So I had to find a way of being part of the scene. And I think even in high school, to be part of the scene, I got into a Shakespearean thing. And Shakespeare, I was at Polonius. And Polonius advised to his son, you know, neither borrow nor lender be, and all those. I remember that. I guess I'm a kind of a ham. I mean, I didn't mind doing that. It was kind of fun, you know,
mm-hmm.
because just in those Roman togas,
mm-hmm.
young kids playing Shakespeare.
Where did you attend school? Give me the names of the schools.
Oh, well, the Lincoln School was a grammar school.
Mm-hmm.
That was on 10th, on 12th Street. So it wasn't too far to walk from 5th. By 1927, I graduated. Oh, no, what am I talking about? 1927, I graduated high school. So come back 3.5 years. Went to high school, that was the Oakland High School. And then after Oakland High School, I went over to my father's importing store, and I stayed there until about 1929.
Mm-hmm.
And it was 1929 when we started the record company. And then let me see, 1928 we started the record company. 1928, 27 I graduated, went over to the store to 1928, and 28 I lived there, you know. And that's when we started the record company. 1929 was the fall
mm-hmm.
of the stock market. And that's when I went to McGregor's. 1929
mm-hmm.
at McGregor. And in 1930, that's when I began to go over to Cal. Boy, I was busy. Day and night, I was
Music. Which branch of the university?
Cal State. In the University of California.
In Los Angeles?
In Berkeley.
In Berkeley.
Yeah, and I was learning harmony and learning because I was. Besides doing that, you also become a mixer. One of the things I learned how to record, you learn how mixing.
Mm-hmm.
And then in mixing, because we were recording Anson Weeks from Mark Hopkins Hotel. Now, I mean, there's a brass section and saxophone, and they're all harmony, you see. I didn't know anything about that sort of thing, so I had to be, there were only two of us. There's the chief engineer, and there's someone that had to do the mixing, to turn the knobs. And here they put these four things, and then McGregor said, boy, you better learn how to, and they stick a score in front of you, you better learn how to do that. But fortunately, I mean, Chinese had an ingenuity, a quick way of learning things, you know, and I went over there and learned about the different sections, the saxophones and the harmony, and I learned that very quickly, and I kept it on mm-hmm. until when I went down here too. So at one point when I felt so good, I said, gee, I think I'm going to be a concert pianist. So I learned that.
At Berkeley too? Or?
No, that was private. You don't learn that at Berkeley because you have to pay, and Berkeley don't teach that. Mm-hmm. You learn harmony, you mm-hmm. know, learn the scales, you learn the history of music, first it was how it came via the chanting. It's all church music, all the Gregorian chants, you know, the different scales, you know. And not until Johann Sebastian Bach, who took all these various scales and put it together, call it a well-tempered clavier, and so that they all integrate and were able to, one is cohesive with the other. If you remember all the church chants, you know, they're all just one single line, didn't have any harmony. So, and harmony began to come into being. Johann Sebastian Bach was the first one. I learned it there, but because it was so interesting that I began to study privately too, you see, mm-hmm. with the people. Because I can't help, I was still working at McGregor at the same time, I cannot default full time to go to Cal to do it. Mm-hmm. But they were good professors there, and I learned separately. And that's how, I cut my teeth in Johann Sebastian Bach, you might say. Because he had all the voices together. You know. First it was the single voice, and then the two-part inventions, the three-part inventions, mm-hmm. and the four voices. And the whole basis of the orchestra is the same thing. The brass choir have four voices. The violins would be the same thing. You can tell by the shape. The high, the sopranos mm-hmm. would be the violin, and then the violas would be the alto, you know. Come the cellos and come the bass, you see. Now in a big orchestra you have many, many violins, many, many violas, many, many cellos, and then gradually get bigger and bigger, you know. And same with the wind instruments, you see. And when you're young you learn very fast, and particularly when you're interested in it. So I became a very, very fine mixer when I came down here. This would be in the 30s, 38, 37, 38, 39. I mean, Union Oil had a symphony, and I monitor those. In other words, I mix those. In other words, they have microphones all over in the different choirs, you see. And the timpani would be the percussion section. And you have to place them, you have to know how loud these things come through, and you have to arrange them so that they're balanced perfectly. Mm-hmm.
So when did you go then after studying at Berkeley, then it was LA Conservatory of Music?
Yeah, when I came down here. When I came down here, I didn't do it immediately. Mm-hmm. I sought out a teacher for piano because I can do that myself, because the piano is the only instrument that can do all the voices. The only difference is that it's always a piano, but at the same time, when an orchestra is breaking up, then we'll say this section of the piano will be given to the violas, or this section, the lower notes will be given to the bass, but the basic notes, before you have 10 fingers, you're able to have all the thing. Although one finger might represent many, many the little finger, which is the top note, mm-hmm. would represent many, many violins, mm-hmm. for instance, you see. Mm-hmm. So
you studied piano?
Oh, yeah, I never...
Piano at LA Conservatory?
Yeah, then I came and studied continue for composing.
Mm-hmm.
So I study composition there, because we're not just only reading somebody else's music. I study composition there. And then later on, I study also with Roy Harris. This tells what time to, on the hour. Roy Harris, at CBS by that time. I had a full knowledge of music by that time, but I'd like to continue with it. And with some of our composers, I went out to UCLA and studied with Roy Harris. I suppose I have an ear for it. It was simple for me. Because starting with the Chinese music, I was young, but once I hear, I remember it, you know. And I was able to go on stage and sing Chinese songs. You know. Mm-hmm. Very bold. Not a shy bone in my body.
Yeah. Where did you study art?
Art, I study at Chouinard, had a very fine teacher at Jepson. And he, after the soldier returned, that's where I studied art, the Chouinard. And also later on, I mean, Jepson started a new, called the Jepson Art, and in which Rico LeBrun, I mean, he was he's very well known, but his fame is shadowed a little bit by Picasso, because he was that same period, you see. Although, like in the music, or rather, the Museum of Modern Art, he had a whole room to himself of the Guernica is the thing that he did. He was very a fine artist. And he had a lot of wonderful students too, like William Bryce, and also Warshaw. I think Warshaw still teaches. He has the professorship at University of California at in Santa Barbara. William Bryce, of course, he's so wealthy. His mother is Fanny Bryce, you see. He taught at UCLA for a while. I think he's retired. So I had all kinds of things going. So
where did you get into jewelry?
Jewelry was after I retired. Mm-hmm. After I retired. And I, oh no, just the before retirement, the year before, my brother Paul is very much interested in jewelry. I'm not so interested in jewelry per se, because I do not care to wear things too much, you know. This is the only thing. But whereby Paul did, and my mother and my aunt, and they all, that they're very, Chinese ladies are very jewelry conscious, you know. And so they're always giving me jade rings and all kinds of things like that, which I have oodles of, and I've graduated some of my gift to my nieces and nephews. But some of them I kept for, because my mother gave to me for graduation or something like that. And but Paul loves them, and he was the one, he went to a rock show, and he saw these jewelry, you know, and then he said, gee, maybe I can do them. And then I'm very logical minded and scientific myself. I said, then you must learn it the right way. And I looked it up, and I called the education department, you know, Bureau of Education. And I say, is there someone for to teach you how to make jewelry? He said, oh yeah, you know. And then the nearest one was in a night school, because we had to do it at night. A night school at in Eagle Rock. And they had all kinds of equipment. You need equipment. Equipment is very important. So we went there, and we make all kinds, like the one that I grounded, and I just kept it there. And I did other things too. I went to a private place where they teach professionals to facet, because I said, gee, diamond, that's so expensive. How do you do that? And it's cutting the facets that are very important. And it's very, very difficult. Very, very exacting, because it had to be engineered is the word, because the face has to be exactly at the angle, otherwise it won't work. And it doesn't pay. I was paying the tuition there was at that time in 1972. 73 or 72. I think fall of 72 and the early spring of 73. Paying something like $8 a lesson. And it took me months before getting it. So the jewel that I cut was more expensive than one that I could buy.
Mm-hmm.